Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Push Podcast. My name's Sydney.
And my name's Megan.
And today we are going to talk about pushing positions.
Yeah, so I feel like this gets a lot of traction these days on social media as well, right, Sydney?
Oh, yes. I love my pushing positions videos. I really do.
What sorts of things have you been talking about with your followers with respect to pushing positions?
Yeah, I think, you know, historically it's, or at least what everyone sees in the movies and on TV shows and what's become, I think, the norm is pushing in what's called the lithotomy position, which is on your back with your feet in the stirrups, right? That's what people think of when they think of giving birth in a hospital setting, right? And when I am, you know, scrolling through comments online, there's a lot of people who have questions of how, like, is that, do I have to push in that position? Is there options to push in other positions? What are the benefits to pushing in other positions? There's a lot of people who advocate that there are a lot of benefits and it's, you know, not following the natural physiology of birth to be put on your back against gravity to push a baby out. So there's a lot of discussion online and that's kind of why I want to dive into this today. I'm so excited, especially talking to with you too, who's an OBGYN, who's done lots of deliveries yourself and, you know, looked at the evidence and all of that. And we can really dive into it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, as a, I think a little bit of like a spoiler from the get-go, right? While pushing out a baby on your back is maybe the norm in our context, certainly in like urban areas in Canada, and arguably in, you know, lots of areas around the world in similar circumstances. It's not necessarily how most people have given birth historically and not always the best way to give birth either.
Exactly.
All right. So while historically, and again, you know, I'm sure that there's lots of information about some of the perceived reasons why pushing on your back became the norm. I've heard that one of the French kings, you know, wanted to have women push on their back from like a voyeurism perspective.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I have not gone down the rabbit hole quite so far to determine how much that did or didn't influence pushing in our current medical setting. But
yeah,
I think both of us have seen some institutional reasons why pushing on your back has become sort of the default position. Hey, Sydney?
Yeah. And I also want to throw out there before we kind of get into it too much that, you know, we're talking more so North America. I don't think everywhere in the world, lithotomy or pushing on your back is quite as common as we see in Canada and the US.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of places in the world where, you know, epidurals aren't available and therefore women are pushing in, you know, quote unquote, more natural positions, which would be maybe squatting or standing because they don't have an epidural that numbs them. So just throwing that out there for, for everyone, just to make sure we're extra clear on that. But I think for the US and Canada, it is quite common nowadays to push on your back. So we're going to explore why and other options and if it even matters.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Would you say that this is the most common way that you have delivered babies, Sydney?
Probably yes, I think so. Just in terms of, for me, it's especially, I've only been a labor and delivery nurse for 5 years now. And my first few years working as a labor and delivery nurse, I almost didn't have the knowledge or the confidence to advocate for my patients to push in different positions because I did find that a lot of providers just, you know, when they're fully and time to push, you put them, you know, in the stirrups on their back. Like that's just what it is. And you break the bed in half. So birthing beds have like the bottom of the bed can completely come off so that the provider can come really, really close for like delivery and then repairs afterwards. And that just became the norm. That's what I was taught to do. So that's what I did, you know? And then as I've kind of educated myself a little bit more in this area and listened to my patients who have some patients come in with, you know, clear birth plans that say, I don't want to push on my back. I want to push, you know, on my side or squatting or doing all these other positions that they've probably seen online or in birth classes. And I'm much more willing to have that conversation with them and to hopefully be able to do it at the time of birth. But I also want to talk today about reasons why we wouldn't be able to do that, the positions that they thought they would want to do. But yeah. But yeah, I would say in general, most providers that I work with prefer the delivery to be in lithotomy. So most of my deliveries therefore are in lithotomy.
Super fair. And I would echo as well, like my own bias is that almost all of the deliveries I've done, of the vaginal deliveries I've done, have been in lithotomy position, right? Yeah. And so it is definitely, you know, what I'm most comfortable with.
Yeah.
It's what I was taught and yeah. sort of my default as I'm thinking through movements that we might do or techniques we might use in an emergency delivery, for instance. Mm-hmm. Having somebody in lithotomy is definitely where my brain goes as much I'm going fun. Through that routine. Mm-hmm. And so it is certainly representative of the majority of my deliveries, although yes. I have done some deliveries not in the lithotomy.
Yeah.
Some on purpose, some not on purpose.
Some not on purpose. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I have to say, it's nice at this juncture in my career, I think, in that it creates kind of like a fun change for me.
Yes.
And I actually really enjoy or have come to enjoy supporting people through differences in positions. But I would say as well, I kind of echo what you mentioned in that I feel like this has been very patient-led.
Yes.
This movement and this change or this shift in how I have viewed this as well in my practice. And it sounds like you would say the same.
100%. Yeah. I think that, you know, with TikTok being a thing nowadays, a lot of people are sharing their knowledge and their experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people are getting their information nowadays. Yeah. So I think they're bringing that to the hospital with them, and that there's nothing wrong with that. Like I encourage it actually to learn about your options before the day comes, but at the end of the day, you're also not going to know what feels right for you until you're in that moment. Right. Like I've had a couple patients who really strongly felt like they wanted to deliver on hands and knees. Mm-hmm. And then when the time came, they actually felt better in lithotomy on their back. They felt safer in that position. And you know, that's okay too, right?
Yep. It's super fair.
You're never gonna, it's why keeping an open mind is huge. But I also wanted to say that I remember the very first delivery that I saw that was on hands and knees.
Yeah.
And it was so different.
Yes.
It's so crazy because the baby's head comes out like face presentation. Like you can see them coming out so much more clearly than in lithotomy. It's just like the baby's like, I mean, I guess it depends which direction they're facing, but majority of babies who come out, you just see like their hair. Mm-hmm. And it was so, I still remember my first hands and knees delivery. It was just so, so cool. I loved
it.
So
cool.
Yeah.
So let's back up a second.
Yes.
What are we even talking about here when we're talking about different positions? Well,
yeah.
Clarifying first, like this is an obstetrical technique, right? That we would use in order to guide people through what we would call the second stage of active labor, right? So we are talking about after you've reached full dilatation and then you are pushing in order to deliver your baby out.
Yes.
What are some of the positions that are not lithotomy that you have seen, Sid, and like what kind of could these variations be that people would be thinking about?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of different options, but I think the most common ones I see are hands and knees. So kind of that, you know, that position that you go into for like a cat cow in yoga, that's kind of the position. And you can be supported on the bed with your upper body or with a peanut ball. So leaning onto the peanut ball or the birthing ball and then kind of bearing down like that while you're pushing. And then also side lying as well. So either side works. I've done that a lot, especially with first-time moms who tend to push for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. I find like having that shift in positions really helps. So just like you know, push for 20 minutes on your back and then 20 minutes on one side, 20 mm-hmm. minutes on the other side. I think motion is lotion in labor, truly. Yeah. And like, I really find it's, even if it's just mentally for you know, the person going through it, it's just like, okay, we can do a couple more in this position and then we're going to change positions and start again. It's really helpful.
Got it.
And then obviously standing or mm-hmm. squatting, mm-hmm. Which I think in the hospital setting is not super common, just because we get a little bit worried that the baby might end up on the floor.
Yes. Yeah, correct.
And, yeah. you know, as long as you can do it safely, it can happen safely, but definitely less common. But squatting in the bed too, I've seen that be done.
So like a supported squat.
Exactly, with mm-hmm. like the squat bar. I don't know mm-hmm. if you guys have heard of that, but the squat bar is great.
Just to circle back to while we're talking yeah. about different equipment, the peanut ball is a magical instrument.
I love the peanut ball.
For those of you who have not been on labor and delivery,
yes.
the peanut ball basically looks like two smallish yoga balls stuck together. So it's kind of intuitive. It looks like a peanut, but it's like an inflatable ball that is very, very similar to a yoga ball otherwise.
Yes. Yeah.
And oftentimes we use it even in the earlier stages of labor in order to help the baby turn one side or the other and to provide mom some comfort as the dilatation process is occurring.
Yeah.
I can say as an OBGYN, I don't know a lot about, I don't have a good, I don't have a good like instinct about the peanut ball, but I can tell you I have left a room so many times with one of our nurses, especially our senior L&D nurses, and said, can you work some peanut ball magic? And they say, yes, come back in 2 hours. And then I come back in 2 hours and the baby has turned in the right position. And I'm like,
it's truly magic.
Perfect. Yeah.
It is truly magic. Like, and I honestly find at the end of the day, like, there's lots of different reasons as to why we'd put you on one side versus the other, depending on the fetal position and all of that. But at the end of the day, if you just throw a peanut ball in between someone's legs and like let them rest there for 20 minutes, I have seen multiple times.
Yeah.
My patient go from like 4 centimeters to 10 centimeters dilated and ready to push in 20 minutes.
Honestly, we should do a whole episode just on the peanut ball.
And we will.
To unpack the peanut ball
because
magic.
Because peanut ball is like my love language.
Oh, I love the peanut ball. And as a laboring human once myself, I can say I double love the peanut ball.
Well, and some people don't like it though. Some people are like, oh, that thing, it made me dilate so quickly. It was painful. And that's what they didn't like about it. I've had a couple people tell me that.
It works too well.
It works too well. Exactly. Yeah. And they were like, they felt like almost like they lost that sense of control because it just, and whether or not it was related to the peanut ball or if it was just their body, we won't know. But I have had a few people say they hate it, but then I've had also a lot of people say they love it. So
again, to unpack for those who have not spent a labor with us or with, with other people, in that early stages of labor, oftentimes we're using the peanut ball basically in a sideline position and with the laboring person's leg kind of draped over top of the peanut ball so that their knee and upper thigh are able to rest in the groove between the two curves. I guess, of the peanut.
Yeah.
And so it does open up the hips in that sense. And I think that's part of what we assume is allowing for better descent of the baby, better turning in the right direction, and ultimately enhanced dilatation because of that.
Exactly.
But again, it falls into kind of the art, I think, in many ways of labor and delivery as opposed to the science. Although, again, I anticipate, like, I would love to delve into that a little bit deeper and do some research of my own and see what evidence there is.
Oh, yeah.
The only position I think we haven't talked about is maybe even the one that is most common as an alternative to the standard lithotomy, which is semi-recumbent, right? So a little bit like 45-degree angle sitting up. And I bet you most providers, you know, delivery providers as well as, you know, L&D nurses probably don't even think of that as an alternative position, right?
Yeah.
Because it still is kind of recumbent, just not in full lithotomy.
Yes.
Like not and fully on your back with legs up kind of thing.
It's true. I find with my patients who I actually tend to lean more towards the semi-recumbent position versus the complete lithotomy. And then what happens, or at least what I've been taught to do, is lower the head of the bed when the fetal head has actually come out.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just for you to be able to guide baby out easier. Is that the case? Like, I actually don't know what the reasoning is, but that's what I tend to do, is lower the head of the bed. And most providers tell me to do that.
Might be just from the perspective of complications, if they were to occur, so that we're not waiting for the like
a shoulder dystocia.
Like the slow descent of the bed in the case of
needing just getting ahead of it,
like emergency maneuvers.
That makes sense.
That's what I imagine.
Yeah.
I think I pushed in semi-recumbent.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's such a blur now.
You're like, I don't even know.
I did not attempt any alternative positions. I'll tell you that. Not because of any intention, but just happenstance, I think. And my second stage was a little bit rapid as well. So I didn't really get the chance to experiment with other positions, but I'd be curious to with an next delivery.
And sometimes, you know, when I'm pushing with patients, there's a clear line of like, okay, this position is working really well for you, or this position is not working at all.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, finding that right position.
Yeah,
because sometimes it is lithotomy. Like, I'm not going to villainize lithotomy because I will say I've had many deliveries that, you know, a patient really wanted to push in other positions and then lithotomy ended up being the one that they...
That worked the best for them.
Yep. And then I've had other patients who hands and knees or side lying or, you know, semi-recumbent works best for them. So kind of like I said before, open mind is key.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So now that we've kind of covered like what all these different positions are, I think it was really interesting for me at least to go back to the evidence to see what sort of benefit is there to any one of these particular positions.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Sydney, maybe I probably shouldn't have been surprised by this, but I was surprised by how good quality evidence there is and how decisive it is for positions that lean more towards an upright pushing position.
Yes. The studies are so for upright pushing, like truly. I mean, you can speak about it more, but I remember when I first learned that most articles and like ACOG really recommends to do second stage in more of an upright position, and it decreases the risk, or not the risk, sorry, the length of second stage by a certain amount, which I thought was so interesting because
it's not
that's
standard.
Not what happens.
And I feel like in many ways, like many hospitals, especially where, you know, Sydney and I are very have some privilege in the sense that we work in these like big academic urban institutions for the most part, and which you might think are quickest to adopt, you know, new evidence, but we actually have really good quality data from almost a decade ago, and I feel like it's not being implemented in many places. So we actually have a Cochrane review for pushing positions specifically that was published back in 2017. And for anybody listening who doesn't have a background in research or research methodology at all, Cochrane review is basically like a really, really thorough report card on a health topic. And it is kind of one of our pinnacles of good quality evidence. So instead of looking at just one study, you have an expert panel that looks at all studies on a particular subject and double checks how reliable they are, and then summarizes what the science says overall. And ultimately, it's one of our most trusted sources in medicine when we're trying to figure out what actually works and what doesn't. Cochrane reviews are known for being independent. They're transparent, and so they explain exactly how they review the evidence, and they're very rigorous. There's strict methodology to ensure that the conclusions are as accurate as they possibly can be. So with respect to positions, upright positions, so specifically kneeling and squatting, have been found to potentially reduce the duration of the second stage, as you mentioned, so the time it takes to push out your baby, as well as the need for assisted delivery. So things like vacuum and forceps in order to help your baby be delivered in an efficient manner. However, there was some evidence that they may increase the risk of blood loss over 500 milliliters, which is about what we would consider to be kind of in the realm of average for a vaginal delivery.
That's interesting. I wonder why.
Now, with epidural, the evidence is a little bit more, I would say, in the air at this point. So that is without epidural, upright positions certainly should be recommended, right? Or we should at the very least be supporting people who are interested in exploring them. Now, without epidural, there's some evidence that a recumbent side-lying position may reduce the need for operative births. But there's a little bit less decisive data, I would say, to support that. Now for babies who are malpositioned, things like hands and knees or side-lying position, it's not necessarily, we think of them as being kind of the best positions, but the Cochrane Review found that they actually didn't really change the need for things like operative interventions or overall outcomes. However, it was suggestive that people may find them more comfortable, particularly in those circumstances. And I think, number one, that speaks to the individualization of labor, right? And and how different it is for every person. Mm-hmm. But also, I think the sense of like control and doing something and having options to try when things are not progressing maybe as we may have anticipated. We also have an expert review that was published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which was similarly supportive of things like operate pushing positions and actually recommended them as a primary mode of delivery for people who do not have an epidural.
Okay.
Now, similarly, their conclusion was fairly consistent with the Cochrane review in the sense that they said, for an epidural, it's not that these positions are contraindicated.
Yeah.
But rather that we just don't have the evidence to conclude quite as decisively that there is benefit to these upright positions
with an epidural.
Interesting. Exactly.
I find that so fascinating because one of the maneuvers that I know you've been taught to do during a shoulder dystocia, which is when the baby's shoulder gets stuck under that pubic bone. That's an obstetrical emergency that doesn't happen super frequently, but it does happen and you have to know how to do it. We have to know how to deal with it. And one of the maneuvers that we do is, well, not one of the first maneuvers, but it is something we're taught, is to reposition the patient on hands and knees. And I always think it's interesting because like when I talk to providers, they're like, well, I prefer to have the patient in lithotomy.
Yeah.
So that in case of, you know, an emergency like a shoulder dystocia, I am able to do my maneuvers and all that kind of stuff, which I guess just means there's other ones that they do before putting the patient on hands and knees. Or what's your take on that?
So I think overall, you know, some of the barriers to adoption as I imagine them, when we're talking about like provider willingness to change practice, I think it's very easy to conceive of that as being this like stodgy old person who's just like, no, I don't want to change the way that I've always done things, you know?
Yeah.
This is how I'm comfortable. And so this is how we've always done it. So this is how we always will do it.
Yeah.
But I think what is important to keep in mind with respect to that is that really when we're talking about provider comfort, a lot of the time we're talking about our own risk tolerance, right? As OBGYNs, and I'm sure midwives and family obstetrical providers do the same, we do a lot of practice for emergency situations, right? And you want us to do that. The first time that I go through the maneuvers for something like a shoulder dystocia, which is where the shoulder gets stuck during the delivery, you don't want the first time that I go through those maneuvers to be the first time that I see one happen in a real person, right?
Absolutely.
And so we do in our training tons of hours of review of the topic, of simulations, right? Of talking through and walking through these actual steps. And the idea is that so then in a real situation where there may be a lot of other variables going on and certainly nerves and stress amongst the team is much higher, that you're able to fall back on these steps that you have practiced many
times. Like muscle memory.
Exactly, exactly. And that is, I think, something that is, although I will say that the reviews that have been done so far do not show an increased incidence of bad outcomes with different pushing positions outside of lithotomy, so on the back. I think it's hard in that moment as a provider to sit back on that, right? When you are the person who is responsible for safely delivering this baby.
Yeah.
And that's really scary. That's scary for a lot of people. It's scary for me.
Of course.
And so do I prefer in that moment to have a patient be perfectly positioned in the way that I have practiced it 100 times over? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, I do. And I don't want to lose any time
Yeah.
Getting somebody back into that position.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. That makes complete sense. Yeah.
But I think that there's room and there's space in this discussion for all of that, right?
Yeah.
That may be my comfort as a provider, and it's not coming from some nefarious desire to only do things the way that I want to do them, but rather because this is how I've practiced. This is how I feel most confident I can get a good outcome in a scary situation. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so having the elements that I can control in place beforehand is something that gives me confidence in that moment.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, that's not a reason in and of itself for us to ignore evidence of what may benefit patients as a whole, right? Especially if the data is suggesting that there is a benefit to adopting these positions in general.
Yeah, I think I see a lot of comments whenever I post something about, you know, providers delivering in lithotomy. A lot of people say, well, if they're not comfortable with emergency situations in other positions, then that should be something that they're taught to do. And I mean, I don't disagree with that, mm-hmm. but it's also difficult to do that because you're also learning so much too, right? It's like, it takes time for these things to change too, right? Yep. But I don't know. I do see a lot of pushback online about that, just being like, well, providers need to educate themselves better on how to deliver in X position, right? Yeah. How does that make you feel? Like,
you know, as with everything in our field, I think that my probably like knee-jerk response or my like emotional response to that kind of thing is a little bit of defensiveness.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Because again, I would say like, what you've said, right? Like, what does that look like? What does it look like to have providers as a whole be trained in a completely different alternative method for one or multiple emergencies that could occur in a labor scenario? We are already having to be responsible for so much.
And
right?
anticipate it. You have to already see the signs. No, like there's already so much going on in your brain.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And I do think that there's a little bit of defensiveness in our field too, you know, rightly and wrongly, in the sense that like, it is easier in some ways for providers who are not the surgeon, right? Mm-hmm. To be more comfortable with alternatives or to be more flexible, I think, in their practice.
Yeah.
Because at least in academic hospital-based birth settings, we're the final line.
Yes.
Right? If somebody else can't get the baby out, they call the OBGYN.
Yeah.
But there's nobody that I can call.
No.
If I I'm having trouble delivering a baby. I'm the final line.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, like in the context of obstetrical emergencies, I think as residents, we often asked our staff, you know, in difficult deliveries. I remember, you know, having a hard C-section extraction early on and saying, how did you get the baby out? Like, walk me through, because I tried and I couldn't. And then my staff had to take over.
Yeah.
And I said, walk me through what you did, because I want to understand how to do this better when I'm the staff.
Yeah.
And over, I have had so many people tell me, and I have since used this line as a staff because it's so true. When you are the final line, you just do it.
You just do
it. Like,
yeah, you have no other choice.
Figure it out and you do it. And it's hard to reflect and to dissect how that actually occurred. And so I think that's the other thing that probably presents a little bit of a barrier in how we talk about this, right? Mm-hmm. Between patients and delivery providers and nurses who are doing the bulk of the actual like one-on-one care, right?
Thank
in
you
the
for
pushing chair.
That.
Oh my goodness. No. You know what's funny, as a complete sidebar, I was getting a massage the other day because my back is a mess, as I'm sure so is yours.
Yeah.
And and my massage therapist was also, you know what's bad when your massage therapist starts working on your back and they go, oh.
Yeah.
Or like, that's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the scenario.
Mine usually are like, oh, you're a nurse. That's what I get.
Exactly. Well, and she asked me, she was like, how long would you push with a patient? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Reasonably, not as long, nowhere near as long as our nurses, right? Yeah. Because I'm pulled in so many different directions as the obstetrician. It's rare that I get the luxury to sit with somebody and to push with them the entire time. But really, it's you. It's the nurses, one-on-one nurses that are able to, that are manning a lot of that. And I think that kind of maybe goes towards why some nurses may be either very comfortable with different pushing positions, right?
Yep.
Because they're the ones who have been managing far more hours of that than we have, or conversely, why they're not comfortable with it, right? If they haven't been doing that.
And I will acknowledge, you know, a little bit of my own bias. And I know like a lot of people probably feel this way, but there are certain pushing positions that are more comfortable for myself, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain pushing positions that, you know, I can sit at the side of the bed or I can, you know, I can still listen to the baby's heart rate perfectly. I can chart. I have, you know, a perfect view of the room. I could, you know, and then there's positions that require a lot more from my own body, right? Yeah. You know, if a patient is side lying, I'm usually holding the other leg up top, or if they're squatting, you know, I'm having to kind of make like look down and like look at the perineum like upside down. Like, you know, you're you're having to, there's a lot of ergonomics, I guess, that go go with that. Yeah. And I just think that's important to also note, because I think a lot of people forget that part. Of course, we always put our patients first.
Well, for sure.
But if you're pushing for 3 hours, which can happen, and you know, you've just recently hurt your back, there's sometimes there's some limitations. And, you know, I'm usually open with my patients and I say, hey, like, let's try this for now. Are you okay if we do this for this amount of time, just to give my legs a rest or something? And they're all the time willing to do that. It's just something to also keep in mind that I think a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think like this idea of provider comfort is something that we often, like I see on social media a lot used as kind of a like, oh, the only reason people push on their back is provider comfort, right? As this, as this like really superfluous, like selfish thing on the part of the providers. And while like, I want to be comfortable during a delivery, right? Yeah. Like, the truth is that our job is inherently uncomfortable. And while I do not blame any individual who doesn't care about my comfort during their delivery, I do think as a system, we should care about the comfort from an ergonomic perspective, right? Of the people that are working within it.
Yeah.
Because the more repetitive strain injuries we get, the more people are not able to continue practicing in this area, and the more it becomes difficult to access, you know, appropriate good quality care. So it's like, it sucks. It's like an annoying thing, and no patient should really have to be considering that, I don't think, in their own labor process, but like as a system, it is important.
Just another point to kind of put out there. But
so another thing I hear a lot about with respect to adoption of this is, again, to return to the concept of like, we don't have a lot of evidence for epidurals, right? And pushing positions. What have you seen with respect to epiduralized patients? How many patients, like what percentage of your practice do you think said gets an epidural? And like who really is able to be pushing in an upright position?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, I think for my hospital that I currently work at, it's about 80% of patients that receive an epidural, which is a high percentage. And I think that's pretty common around North America, at least. And so majority of my patients are coming in with coming in and getting an epidural. The ones who don't are usually patients who have had a baby before, and they come in and their labor is pretty short and quick, and they don't necessarily have the time to receive an epidural. Or they come in wanting to do it without an epidural. But yeah, the pushing positions with the epidural, there's a lot of misconception that you can't move after you have an epidural. And that's not true. Like, in fact, if you have a good epidural, it means that you can move your legs. I always say that to my patients. Like, if you can feel a little bit, it's actually a good thing. Because you're not necessarily like the epidural blocks the pain receptors, but hopefully you can still feel pressure. So as baby comes down lower, you're still feeling that pressure in your bottom usually. And then you're still able to lift and move your legs, even though they might feel heavier or tingly, kind of like pins and needles. That's all normal. But with a little bit of assistance, we can get you. I've gotten lots of patients on hands and knees with epidurals. I will say though, I have had a couple patients who I've tried and it just has not worked because their legs are far too heavy. So it's very dependent on the patient.
The degree of block.
And the degree of block. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I always say it's something I'm willing to try as long as we do it safely. Yeah. So usually if they have a support person there who can help me, or I'll grab another nurse as well.
Yeah.
And we do it together.
Yeah.
And then also, if they feel comfortable with it, like we talk about it beforehand and I'm like, hey, if we try it and you hate it, we can go back. Like we can go onto your side, we can go onto your back, into semi-recumbent.
Yeah.
The only positions that are like not safe to do with an epidural are standing.
Yeah.
And I will say though, there are walking epidurals. Yeah. Those do exist. I do not have experience with walking epidurals. So that's a whole other thing, but
perhaps we can get an anesthetist on at some point to talk to us a little bit more about epidurals.
Yeah.
Because I have also heard that walking epidurals do not exist. And so I think that this is, or at least the concept that you can have not enough block that your pain is improved, but a but low enough level block that we could trust you on your feet. Because I think ultimately some of what this comes back to is, and again, I think like a walking epidural is not necessarily like a thing in and of itself.
Yeah. It's just a lower dosage of the epidural.
But even then, I think that the part of what this comes down to in some practical ways is liability.
Yeah.
Right?
Is it safe? Right?
Is it safe?
Yeah.
And like truly, and I'm sure that there are, and I would love to hear people's experiences from different hospitals and especially providers who might be listening.
Yeah.
Some hospitals may not allow weight-bearing positions with an epidural because of liability, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a challenge that kind of supersedes the authority of either of us, right? If a hospital has decided that, you know what, if you fall and if you injure yourself or your child or are one of our staff members, right?
Yeah.
That's not a situation that the hospital is willing to undertake from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
And I would also love to hear from any midwifery providers, right?
Yes.
In that, like, is that a consideration at birthing centers? Is that a consideration at home? Because I imagine, again, like liability from a legal sense doesn't necessarily stop the second you leave the hospital doors, right? It probably is or should be a consideration in many places, although it's, again, it's kind of this like dark side of this process that we don't like to talk about, right?
Yeah.
But it is practically a barrier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a tricky one, right?
I
when my patients come in and really want to have an epidural but also do different positions, my first instinct is absolutely, we're going to do it. We're going to do what works for you. We're going to try.
Yeah.
But keep an open mind. Yeah. That's like I know I keep saying that, but that is truly the best thing you can do, because based on where you're delivering, how your epidural is working, how the baby is responding too, because baby ultimately is in charge. They call the shots, and some positions they don't like. And when I say don't like, I mean their heart rate drops. And we, you know, there's different positions that take pressure off of like the umbilical cord and stuff. So position changes are super important for monitoring the baby as well. So, you know, we could try hands and knees, and the baby actually is like, nope, that doesn't work. So then we have to go onto your side or back onto your back. And, you know, that's just a part of it. That's what birth is. It's unpredictable. And you have to be flexible. So
Well, interesting, Tilly, to like, you're totally right in that, like, oftentimes we don't know how babies are going to respond to labor in general, much less a pushing position. The American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology expert consensus did actually find that there was a decreased rate of abnormal tracings associated with upright positions. And the thought is actually that that in an upright position, there is less of a less pressure put on the vena cava, which is the blood vessel that brings blood back up to your heart, and ultimately to your lungs to be oxygenated and sent back through your body. So without that, like, halt in the system, returning blood back, that potentially babies are able to be better oxygenated during the delivery.
Which is kind of the same thing where I'm sure many of our listeners who are pregnant or who have experienced pregnancy have felt, is like when you're you know, you're told not to lie flat on your back, right? Mm-hmm. And I've seen that a lot online too. It's like, well, I was told during my pregnancy not to lie flat on my back, but then that's exactly how they want me to deliver my baby.
Yeah.
Flat on my back. How does that make sense, right? So,
I mean, the truth is, again, is that everything is nuanced, right?
Mm-hmm.
While we don't certainly as a specialty try to instill fear in people that flat on your back, that if you like wake up on your back, that anything bad is going to happen to your baby.
Yeah.
I think the theory is still there, right? In that there is probably some decreased venous return associated with lying flat on your back.
Which makes you feel kind of lightheaded sometimes. Yes. Dizzy.
I tell my patients, don't worry if you wake up on your back.
Yeah.
You are, if your baby is in any trouble, you are going to wake up also unwell, right? Yeah. Like you are not going to. Do not stress if you're like, I in my own pregnancy woke up on my back all the time. And every time I was like, oh, crap. Like,
yeah.
Back to my side. Yeah. Back to rolling around. Trying to get comfortable.
Wedge you. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, as far as downsides to these upright positions.
Yeah.
The Cochrane Review did find that there may be an increased rate of second degree tears. So again, those tears that aren't just kind of scrapes in the mucosa, but rather... Yeah. Tears further down into some of those initial muscles that support the perineum. Mm-hmm. So the bulbar cavernosus and the transverse perinealis.
We kind of go into detail about the different tears in our husband stitch video episode. If you guys want to learn more about that.
Exactly. But I think it remains to be teased out what the impact of labor dynamics are right on those rates of tears. And again, especially where that same Cochrane Review suggested that maybe more severe tears are occurring in a smaller incidence in people who have pushed upright. So all that to say, I mean, I think if we could summarize any of this at all, there's no single best position.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But flat on your back doesn't necessarily mean need to be the natural default.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that there's lots of room for alternatives, right? And perhaps we shouldn't even be conceiving of them as alternatives, right? Yeah. Maybe this should just be a menu of options that we're able to offer people.
And try out, like trial and error, right?
Yeah.
See what works. And ask questions, like ask early, like what positions, like, can I try during pushing, or which one would you suggest? Because, you know, lots of times the nurse or the OB or the midwife, whoever's there, like they usually have some tricks up their sleeves too that they're willing to try for your specific situation as well. So, yeah.
Are there any like stories or funny anecdotes that you can share with us, Sydney, about pushing in general and pushing positions as we wrap this up?
I actually have a friend who delivered on her hands and knees. And she had one of her friends came in and did a like some photography. She didn't hire a birth photographer, but it was just one of her friends. And her friend took this picture of her delivering on her hands and knees. So she was on her hands and knees and the baby's head was literally out. And her hubby was like, had his hand on her back and was just facing the camera with like the biggest smile on his face, but kind of just like shock mixed, like just like, oh, and like
what
holding
is happening.
And it is the cutest photo I've ever seen in my entire, it just encompasses like, I feel like everything that happens in a delivery, just so much emotion.
The chaos. The like,
yeah.
The discomfort. Honestly. Also the like the wonder probably. Yeah.
There's so many stories I can think of, but I just loved that photo because it just warmed my heart. It was so cute.
Amazing. I love that so much.
I have another one. Ooh. I have another patient who I've just recently started to kind of be recognized at the workplace with my socials and stuff. But this story takes the cake because whenever someone is asking me like, oh, do your patients recognize you at work? I usually tell them this story because it's so funny. But basically, I was walking in to a delivery that was like a nurse delivery because the OB was in the operating room. And this was someone who walked in like rip-roaring labor.
Yeah.
And I remember her also on her hands and knees. And she looked up, like after she'd finished her contraction, she kind of looked up, made eye contact with me, who I hadn't even been in the room yet. This was my first time going in. Yeah. I was just going to support my colleagues. And she goes, "Nurse Sydney." And she was just so excited. And it was the cutest thing. And I was like, "Yes, you're doing so amazing." And she was literally about to deliver her baby. And she like stopped and like made eye contact with me and was so excited. So it was cute. It was so sweet. Definitely a moment I will never forget.
Oh my gosh. And the tableau of all of that.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yes. It was amazing. But do you
I wish you had a photo of that moment.
I know. Me too. Me too, for sure. But do you have any stories, any memories you have of different pushing positions with patients yourself?
You know what? One of the first times I think that I ever did sort of a non-supine delivery position as a staff was a precipitous delivery, which means that it was happening quicker than we can really get our bearings to accommodate.
Yeah.
And long story short, without giving too many, you know, details, this patient ended up delivering standing up beside the hospital bed.
Okay.
And I think what was the most fun about that is again, what kind of what I've mentioned in you know, previous chats about like how fun labor and delivery can be with your team.
Yeah.
Because it was me, our resident, and two senior nurses all there just trying to, you know, support this patient and catch this baby in a safe way, literally catch this baby in this circumstance. And I think there were like, I don't even know who delivered the baby because we had so many caring sets of hands that were ready to help and ready to catch. And we walked out afterwards and it just was such a like, such a positive feeling for everyone involved, even in what I can only assume was a very scary position for the person.
For
right?
sure. Especially when things are going really quickly, it can actually
really
be
quickly, but
quite
it was
traumatic.
Like such a wonderful team moment where it was really like a group effort to with the patient as well, too, who like did everything she could to you know, listen to us and push slow as slow as she could. And, you know,
right.
So it was a really like wonderful moment and something that I reflect upon in these kind of, you know, pushing situations that are a little bit different than what my norm is or what my comfort level is as long as we're not in an emergency situation, there's a lot of room for really wonderful, you know, group effort moments
and finding the joy in it, right?
There's space in this too, again, for like joy and discovery and curiosity.
And just sitting back and seeing how amazing the woman's body is, truly.
Yeah, it was truly a moment of awe as well for deliveries in general. And it's nice to rediscover those too the further I get along and the more normal this gets for me, you know?
Yeah. The only deliveries almost deliveries, I should say. I haven't ever had one, but the only ones that make me nervous is when a patient starts to push on the toilet.
Oh, I've seen your
those
posts
ones
about
make
that.
Me so nervous because I do not want a toilet baby, which I know they probably happen all around the world very frequently, but those ones make me a little bit nervous.
Those ones you don't love as
I'm like, let's get you into a birthing stool near the bed instead.
Yeah, let's at least approach the bed.
Yeah.
Listen, overall, guys, I hope that, you know, this, I think reading more about this topic has really galvanized me to maybe take it upon myself to suggest some different birthing positions as, you know, when our teammates and when our patients are involved and excited to explore that as well. And I really hope from your perspective that this has given you some empowerment to explore this topic on your own as well and enter this discussion with your providers.
Yeah. And just know that there's not a one size fits all pushing position.
Yeah.
You know, as most things we talk about on this podcast, everyone is unique. Yep. And just listen to your body, listen to your wants, your desires, and talk to your healthcare team. Yep.
Yeah. So listen, guys, find us in the comments. Tell us about your birth stories.
Yes.
How did you push? In
what position? I love to know it.
What did you like and not like about it?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, follow us.
Follow us. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at the.push.podcast. And you can listen to our podcast every week on Spotify or Apple Music.
We will see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Bye.